Hello Jets streamers, and welcome to this review of the Newcastle Jets Round 5 game versus Perth Glory, as well as the preview of the Jets Round 6 game against Western United and the W League Round 1 game against Melbourne City. My name is Luke, and joining me to dissect all the talking points and key matchups is Andy. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Great to be here, Luke. Let's chat about it.
Let's get into it. Also joining us today is Matt. Matt, thanks for coming along.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Andy. Let's hope that this is much more smooth sailing for the next approximately 70 minutes like it was on the weekend.
Yes, this is currently our second time trying to do this. We have the return of Robot Luke from a few weeks back. So hopefully we've got
Don't
those
say
problems
its name.
Sorted. Say it three times and it appears. Let's go to the opening question. This one has sort of been, I've got inspiration from this from my parents who are currently on their first solo international trip in 27 years. They keep sending us photos of their trip. They're currently in Budapest and Vienna, which is great. And seeing all the photos making me jealous and making me want to get on that travel bug. So along that topic, gents, if money wasn't a barrier, where would you live and why?
So for me, I would still live here, but set up a base in some of the greater footballing nations. So your Europe around London, that sort of area, and also probably look at one of the developing leagues like America or something like that. So that would be my choice of residence.
Cool. Matt, how about you?
I have decided that I'm going to run with a city that I've been to before, but I couldn't really afford to stay. So I'm going to say Monte Carlo, only because you're close enough to everything without being, you know, in a massive, massive city. It's a really nice area. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's, you know, nice all year round. You've got, you know, your different attractions, let's put it that way, during the course of the year. And it is, a little bit above my budget, let's put it that way, if I was to stay there for more than a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably going to be the case for me as well if I tried to move there or my answer. My answer is London, pretty much because of the football. I feel like I'd be able to really get into the whole footballing spirit there. You know, there's plenty of games going on each weekend, both in the top flight and the lower leagues. So I feel there's going to be no shortage of football to immerse myself in there. So anyone who's listening, tweet us, message us, let us know what your answers are. It'd be very interesting to hear what other people would pick if they had the unlimited budget. Let's jump into the game. So Jets played Perth Glory last Saturday, 5 p.m. kickoff at McDonald Jones Stadium. Crowd of 8,038. Some quick stats. Jets had 35.8% possession, Perth with 64.2. Shots were fairly even between both sides. Jets had 13 with 4 on target, Perth had 12 with 4 on target. Andy, how did you feel about the crowd for the day? You know, I personally feel like 8,000 was a good effort with all things considered. You know, there's been a lot of media spotlight on the fires that are happening up north, which no doubt would have had some effect on a number of our members and other supporters who might normally travel down. And, you know, I think there was a festival in Newcastle that day as well, which would have affected numbers for the day.
Yeah, typical Newcastle, go and throw everything on the one day and expect them to all do well. Definitely a situation where team isn't performing great at the moment, still sort of almost in that pre-season type performance. Can only expect that not everyone would race to come, especially when they have other options or, as you said, impacted by the fires, which obviously our hearts go out to all those people who are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's devastating what's been happening up north. And, you know, I think throughout the game there was a lot of I remember looking around and sort of thinking, man, there is a lot of smoke here and we're sort of nowhere near it. So, you know, for everyone that is currently up north and is currently suffering from all this devastation, you know, we're all thinking of you. We hope you all pull through it and hopefully, you know, everything works out in the end. Matt, what were your thoughts on the crowd? Because I guess the other thing to remember is, as Andy said, was performances haven't been good and we were coming off a 4-1 loss to Sydney from the previous week. Did the crowd surprise you or was that sort of what you expected?
I'll be honest, it was about what I expected. 5 o'clock, when you're sitting in the Eastern Grandstand and the sun's sort of on the way down, it's not exactly the most sort of comfortable position. You know, backed up with, oh, you know, also taking into account the last couple of performances and especially last week where, you know, we were basically given a football lesson and Ernie, you know, during the week didn't seem to have sort of any answers. I wasn't sort of going into the weekend with much optimism. 10,000 members, 8,000 turn up. It's about what I expected.
Yes, no, as I said, that's what I sort of predicted. And, you know, I think 8,000, especially for, you know, Perth's never a big crowd with us. You know, they never draw a crowd. So I think that was a pretty good effort. We'll talk about the lineup. Andy, the one big change from the squad that faced Sydney was Bugard out injured in very late on before kickoff with a groin injury.
Yeah, I think it was great to see Lockie Jackson get his chance. He's sort of been on the fringes for a while and I feel it's something that we're going to see a bit more as I don't think we're going to have that season where both Topper Stanley and Bugard are going to play every game. I think it's definitely coming to that period where, you know, they'll sure play every game, but maybe not always as a partnership and stuff like that. So to get someone coming through is great for the future.
Absolutely. And I think, as you said, Lockie Jackson coming in, you know, I personally think, especially from the first couple of games, that Bugard had done well, considering, you know, he missed most of the preseason recovering from surgery. So, you know, for him to have another setback so early in the season is no good. You know, you don't want that from your cap. You know, you don't want your captain missing out on games through injury, especially when he's sat out so long to try and get it sorted. And we'll talk more about Lockie's performance later on in the piece. From the get-go, Matt, what were your thoughts early on in the game? You know, we in the corresponding fixture last year, Jets almost scored in 17 seconds and then Perth went up the other end and scored a penalty in the second minute. So was it did you expect Perth or the Jets to come out of the blocks or what were your thoughts on the first 10 or so minutes?
To be fair, I thought that we were actually quite positive. I wasn't expecting Newcastle to sort of create opportunities and we seemed to. And I think a lot of that came down to Stephen Jagrkovic having a much, much better game than what he did last year. But as well as that, Arroyo actually seemed to be, I think for the last couple of games, we've fallen into the trap to play him like chest high or head high long balls and hope that he was going to bring them down. And what I noticed that he was actually coming back to receive the ball more, you know, off the front line into a number 10 line and sort of looking to play it wide sort of straight away or looking to link up with Timmy. So there certainly seemed to be a combination there, which, you know, gives me a bit more of a sense of optimism for the season moving forward.
Yeah, it's definitely good seeing some of the play. They did seem to link up very well compared to previous games. There seemed to be a lot more plays coming off. They were trying to experiment a bit more, which was great to see. And things came off. And yeah, I honestly think we had, I thought we had Perth pretty rattled in the first 10 minutes. I think by the 8th minute or something, Reddy was already slowing down the play from goal kicks, which, you know, that's something that I think they're pretty renowned for. They did it a lot when we played them last year. So I think it was a very positive start and what was very much needed after the performance against Sydney. One of the big talking points early on in the half, Andy, was the penalty shout for Fitzgerald. It went to VAR. The referee didn't award it. Went to VAR. They cleared it. The crowd wasn't too happy about it. What were your thoughts on it?
I think with the VAR side of it, it comes back to that clear and obvious, but I thought it was a very clear and obvious. So I would have to confirm the rules with our resident referee, Anthony, but I've always been led to believe that the rule is essentially the same with a handball. If the arm is away from the body and pushing into the opposing player's back, then that to me would be the dictionary definition of a shove in the back, which would result in a penalty in this situation. So yeah, 100% penalty for me. I feel that, I think in commentary, they said that in that situation, the referee really should have gone over and had a look at the sort of sideline screen and been able to make a bit more of a adjudication. But it's very easy for us to say that when you can't hear what the VAR is actually saying to the referee, and also depending what language he said it in, he may not have actually understood what was being communicated. So I think definitely a penalty 100%. So
it, yeah, so it was a very contentious one of the big talking points out of the game was the whole language incident that Ernie has brought up in the post-game press conference. Matt, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, to be like, I'll be honest, I didn't think it was a penalty on first viewing. I thought it was like he went to ground quite easily, and if it had been up the other end and it had been one of our centre backs putting their hand on Castro, I would have been spewing about it. I've seen that, you know, like I think the reactions have been pretty mixed from different fans, and I know that one of our ex podcasters, Glenn, was on Twitter saying that he didn't think it was a penalty either. Watching the reviews and having it slowed down, etc. You know, I think if you go by the letter of the law, then you know it probably was a penalty. But my first impression was that no, it should have been play on. So I just think we should get rid of VAR, and I'm not too disappointed with that decision. I certainly think that there were other chances that Newcastle had to go, you know, ahead before that point in the game that we probably should have taken advantage of, rather than, you know, waiting for what would have been a really soft penalty to once again get us off the mark.
Yeah, I mean, the whole conversation about VAR, whether it should be in or out, that's a whole pot in itself. But, you know, for me, I think watching it live at the game, first thought was it's a penalty. And then after seeing the replays and stuff, I sort of thought, you know, Fitzgerald had his arm on the Perth defender first, and then he sort of shoved him back. It was soft. I would have liked the pen, but in saying that, I feel, as you said, if it was given against us, I'd be absolutely filthy about it and be blowing up about it. I wasn't as disappointed as, I dare say a few other supporters at the ground would have been from that decision. But in saying that, it wasn't too long after that penalty shout that the Jets took a lead. Matt, it was a pretty good goal.
To be fair, it was some fantastic play. Started from what I remember by Jugarkovic taking like a first time sort of volley touch to Redenton, who then played one of his only forward passes that we'll probably see for the season. He found Johnny Katrimbas in some space, who drove forward. I think he found like Arroyo again from that, who held up the ball once again just off that front line. And then Arroyo back to Jugarkovic for his sort of second touch in that phase, who, you know, played a really, really good ball to Hoffman, who took up a good position and absolutely put it away. And I think I was watching sort of highlights in the replay. I was probably a little bit critical of Hoffman earlier during the game when he seemed to sort of come in and crowd Arroyo out of, or took up the same space that Arroyo did for an earlier opportunity where it fell to Arroyo and he shot and it was saved already at the near post. But that was some really, really good play. I remember watching it unfold from the, you know, the grandstand and thinking, you know, like we're actually moving the ball really, really well. And whoever was on the pod last week saying that Stevie UG rarely has two bad games in a row. I think just that little phase justified that comment.
Completely agree. I thought, as I said before, I think they were moving the ball around a lot more cleanly. They seem to have a lot more intent with it. And I think, as you said, with Rydenton playing that forward pass, I think I made the point to my mates when we were watching it that, oh my God, he's played a forward pass. What's going on?
It was only, we ended up with
a goal out of it. So
to be fair, it was only marginally forward. It was more sideways than forward, but it did get forwards.
We'll get the angles out. How sharp was it? as you said, it was a good goal. And to be honest, it was sort of the goal that we probably deserved to have with the run of play we had. I think we tended to just limit Perth's chances in the first half, and it was definitely not against the run of play. I think we controlled that first half fairly well. Andy, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, with the goal, it was great to see. You know, when I saw the ball come through from Jugarkovic, I thought this is going to have too much on it, that Reddy was going to get to it, but Hoff just managed to get that little toe to it that just sort of pushed it wide enough to be able to get a second stab at it. And yeah, it's amazing how he can go from villain to hero so quickly. But if it's in the back of the net, he deserves the praise for it. So great effort.
Absolutely. And it was a good finish on his left foot to beat Reddy. Just got it high and wide past him. And so the Jets took the 1-0 lead in the first half. It wasn't too long after that goal, though, that everything seemed to kick off in a very... just all of a sudden, almost. Andy, what were your thoughts on that Rydenton yellow and the all-in that happened after it?
There was certainly a case for, like, the yellow was deserved. Rydenton seemed to just really jump in, but it'd be interesting. Clearly, Grant must have had a bit more to say to Hoff, because Hoffman was, like, gunning for him and wouldn't leave it alone and kept sort of trying to get around players to go and have words or have a bit of a push and shove with him. So clearly there was a bit more than just the, you know, pushing Rydenton or whatever after the challenge. So I guess we'll never know what was said, but for Hoffman to be a fairly chill guy, it was great to see the whole team sort of jumping in and, yeah, I guess someone to step up and play that role that Bugard usually plays on the field in those kind of instances, kind of that enforcer role that's like, no, you're not going to push my team around sort of thing.
Absolutely, and he went straight after him as well. Matt, what were your thoughts?
I'd say that he was probably about a week early for that kind of challenge. If it had been down at Geelong, it would have been called a specky, but you can't knee people in the head even if you're going for the ball. So, yeah, like clear yellow card for Rydenton, who and had probably turned the ball over a few times by that stage. So it was probably, like, you know, looking to make a bit of an impact. I watched the highlights again today and I didn't really see Grant say anything to Hoffy. I think, yeah, Hoffy was definitely sort of gunning for him. And then Arroyo sort of jumped right in the middle of everyone. So maybe that's where the Spanish from the referee started. He figured that he needed to talk to the meanest looking guy on the pitch. I thought it was really just a bit of handbags. It was good to see that there was a bit of passion, but I don't think anything was sort of any in danger, like there was any danger of sort of really kicking off like it did in one preseason game versus, was it Cessnock that we had? With a certain Spanish...
I think it was against Wellington at Cessnock.
That'd be it, yeah. With another South American central defender. Good to see at least that you know, they you know, were prepared to battle it out for the team. So, yeah.
I think the thing that surprised me in all that was, you know, you see these people come in, they'll push each other. I think the thing that surprised me most was the fact that the two main people players pushing each other, Hoff and Grant, Hoff got away without a yellow out of all that. It was only Grant that got it. So that sort of surprised me that Hoff was able to get away unscathed. As it turns out, from what we'll talk about in a minute, that yellow card cost Grant. But, you know, that's a problem for another team, not us, unfortunately. So we went into the halftime break at 1-0 up, the second home game in a row where we took a 1-0 lead into the second half. Second half, when we came back out, what were your thoughts on the second half, Matt, in terms of momentum, chances, more VAR discussions later on?
I think the first half we definitely had the momentum and we had the lion's share of the possession, and I'll be corrected if need be, that's Danny Dave, but it seemed like we had more ball in more sort of attacking areas, and that seemed to change after half time, like it did last week against Adelaide. We certainly, you know, managed to carve out a few really good chances, and one of them that I sort of distinctly remember early in the half was another really good ball from Arroyo to put Fitzy one-on-one, that I really think he should have done better with. I think that was like another case where if he had a bit of confidence or if he had that touch, that we really could have gone two goals ahead and sort of really started to put some doubts in Perth's mind and put the game to bed. From memory, had another sort of pretty good chance in the first half where he had the option to either go hard and hit the ball left-footed across the keeper or try and cut back in inside of Frenich and take it on his weaker right foot, and he took that sort of second option. But I think that I can't put my finger on what caused it, but there was a bit of a momentum shift from the first half to the second half. And we started to see Economides come into the game a lot more. He, especially in the final third, seemed to be getting on the ball a bit more and drifting a little bit more centrally. It almost got to the stage where I thought it was only a matter of time before Perth would equalise.
It definitely had the vibes that we needed a second goal to see the game out. The amount of chances we had, letting Perth back into the game. We did the same thing against Adelaide at home. First half, we were all over them. Second half, they were all over us. So, you know, it's something that they need to work on because, as you said very early on in the pod, it's a 90-minute game. It's not a 70-minute game. And it's all well and good to take a lead into the last 10 minutes, but if you do that, you need to see it out or extend the lead. You can't let them back in. Ask you what you mentioned Economides, you know, came to life more in the second half and was able to get into some really good chances. They got a few repeat corners at a few points throughout the half. What were your thoughts on Fornaroli's performance throughout the game?
If that's directed at me, I think he's really he looked all right in the first couple of games for Perth. He looked hungry. I don't think he's the same player that he was from a couple of seasons ago before he did his ACL. Or I'm pretty sure it was an ACL when he was playing for City and then like missed half a season. Whether it's because they haven't been able to get him the service, and I guess, you know, after losing a player like Davidson, that's a really hard worker on one side, and losing a couple of really sort of stable central defenders like Sporanovic and Lowry and whatnot, you know, the team might be a little bit sort of unbalanced. But, Keo, I think, did a pretty sort of thankless job for that Perth team last year in that he was basically their first defender, or he was their first defender. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily Fornaroli's sort of in his kit bag. I think he's sort of more someone that wants to be receiving the ball in those areas where he can make a difference rather than, you know, sort of set the foundation. So knowing his potential or knowing the influence he's had on sort of past games, I might give him a pass mark, but not much more than that. So, you know, maybe a 6 out of 10.
I think it was quite telling that he ended up getting subbed off in the second half. I think he's definitely lost some of his lethality that he's had in previous seasons, probably missing the majority of last season through personal issues that with the coach, you know, whatever Warren Joyce had against him, you know, freezing him out of the squad. I think he's probably just lost some of his, you know, having the best part of a year off at his age. You know, it would still take him a fair bit of time to get back into the swing of things. And, you know, for Perth, they'd want him to hurry up, but, you know, we're more than happy to for him to keep putting in performances like that. Andy, there was another VAR call that had the crowd going in the second half. Late on in the game, there was a shout for handball, which was very close to the goals. Was the handball committed inside or outside of the 18-yard box?
Was this the one for us with Fitzgerald?
Yes.
I remember saying at the time that it would be interesting to see. I'm pretty sure there's usually a camera right behind the goals, if not slightly to one side of the goals at that end. And I think you would have needed that view sort of looking from behind the goals up the field to determine clearly whether that was in or out of the box. I thought looking at it that it was in, and that looking at it from the other angle, if available, would have only confirmed that fact. But again, as Matt said before, there were more than enough chances where I don't think we should be really sitting here going, oh, if we had that chance. And there's also, like, Liam Reddy is pretty good with a penalty shot. So there's no guarantee that I would imagine Dimmy would have probably had the shot, and there is no guarantee that he would have put that in the back of the net anyway. So probably should have gone to us, but at the end of the day, we can't just always be looking at, you know, the things that didn't go our way, because you create your own luck in football most of the time.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as we said, we had plenty of chances to take the game. If we were good enough, we wouldn't need to rely on these sort of calls. I think for me, it was similar to the first one, in the first half. I saw it as, you know, he's called it as outside. If he, you know, the VAR is there to change clear and obvious. To me, I reckon if we had different camera angles, as you said, it probably would have shown either way, confirmed either way. But off the angles we were given, you would be very, very hard pressed to say 100% certainty, yes, he was in the penalty box, yes, that's a penalty kick. The only real way you could have done it from that was going off the position of the defender's feet, which were outside, but it's not something that really should have changed the game. We had plenty of chances. We should have taken something else. We wouldn't have, you know, don't need to rely on, or shouldn't need to rely on that sort of thing. And I agree. I don't think it was a penalty. I think if the shoe was on the other foot and we were in that position, I would be very, very disappointed that we would, you know, if that had been given a penalty kick.
Yeah. And with the clear and obvious error side of VAR, I always wonder, is it clear and obvious to the referee that they've made a mistake, or is it clear and obvious when you spend 10 minutes analysing it and you then come to the clear and obvious conclusion that they were wrong? And that is kind of against the spirit of the game. And if we didn't have that technology, we'd be like, yeah, it's a crap situation, but, you know, we move on. So I guess that's one of the things, is, you know, the Perth Glory player seem to straight away acknowledge, yep, I'm in the wrong, by trying to leave the scene of the crime as quickly as he could. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, we had the set piece opportunity and from memory fairly butchered it as well. So yeah, it just is all about taking the opportunities when and if they come.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is 100% correct. And, you know, if you're not taking chances in games against teams that have performances like Perth did, you know, you can't expect to be making finals or challenging for titles if you can't take all 3 points. We held on until the 86th minute. They eventually broke through. Matt Diego Castro, it was a bit of a scramble in the lead up to that goal.
Yeah, but let's face it, by that stage, I think the writing was on the wall. I think Economides had already had a couple of good shots at goal where, you know, one was parried away by Moss, another one, I think, hit the crossbar. You know, in the lead up to that goal, I think it might have hit the crossbar once. There might have been a couple of half clearances, you know, half headed clearances away. You know, it's hard to sort of direct any fault to one individual player, but I think I still think that left back position is something that you know, it's time and time again sort of shown a little bit, you know, that we do have a weakness there. And you know, with JK being caught out of position a couple of times, but if there was one player that you did not want that ball to fall to when it did, it was Diego Castro, because he was cool as when he slid it past Moss. So, you know, on the balance of play for the half, it was probably a deserved goal.
Andy, are you like me? Did you see that lead up into that play and just think, when's this going in? Yeah, as Matt said, there was a lot of pinball. Were you just sort of waiting for it to happen?
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, when I think it was Tupper Stanley went in and performed that tackle, I thought this is 2 feet off the ground. This is going to be a pen if anything. And I think that was maybe the mindset of some of our players that, you know, and I don't know if the referee played advantage at that point or if it all just happened too quickly, but I am pretty confident if the goal didn't go in, then it probably would have been called back under VAR for that or something anyway. So, yeah, I think it worked out in a way that it was a matter of time. As Matt said, it was pretty much that, you know, first person to hit either post and the crossbar was going to score a goal at that point. And they were just shooting for fun. And our players, our back line seemed to switch off at that point and just pretty much lose their man in a scramble. So it was bound to happen. And who else but Castro to make it happen?
Yeah, it was very much a typical finish to a Jets game from years gone by. Lead until the last few minutes and then give it away. So 1-1 was how it ended.
So I was going to say it's almost just from weeks gone by. You know, we're just lucky it didn't happen a little bit earlier, like it did against Adelaide.
I guess we can also say we're lucky it didn't get any worse than just the one goal afterwards as well. So off the kickoff from that, Perth did go down to 10 players. Alex Grant got a second yellow card for what has been spoken about on social media as a very soft second yellow. I tend to have thought it was probably, you know, not to the same extent that Rydenton did in the first half, but I thought it was somewhat similar to that yellow. So they ended with 10. He'll miss their next game, which will be next weekend, I believe. I think Perth have a bye this weekend. Matt, did you think that was soft?
I think you summed it up perfectly with your phrasing, a soft second yellow. After 85 odd minutes, if you're making that tackle and haven't had a caution, then you know it was probably warranted. But we all know that the burden of proof or the threshold level changes after from one yellow to the next. So I thought that it was a pretty soft yellow card, especially given that, you know, that Thurgate bounced straight up after it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That's something for the Perth guys to, I'm sure they'll discuss that in length in the coming weeks, especially when they do play the next game and he is out of it. So 1-1 was how it finished. We spoke before the crowd, 8,038. Player of the match. I guess there's a couple of ways to look at this. So the fan vote, and thanks to everyone that voted for their player of the match through the Jetstream poll. Arroyo was voted player of the match by the supporters. Lucky Jackson ended up in the A-League Team of the Week. I think that's the first time we've had a Jets player in the A-League Team of the Week this season, which, you know, good on him for his first start of the season and having such a big performance like that. Gents, who was your pick for Man of the Match?
I believe I chose Stevie UG. I think it was just another one of those games where everything seemed to go through him, but I'm not at all upset or shocked that Arroyo got it. He seems to be getting there a bit more. It's just working out that combination. I myself am pretty big on the mindset that he needs to play as a two, but it just depends, like with someone else up front with him to play off, but it's just about finding who exactly that person is, and I'm not yet convinced that that is Hoffman, but we'll wait and see how it goes.
Yeah, good call. I thought Stevie UG was really, really good. Once again, you know, as I said earlier, turned it around from what was a pretty poor game last year. I thought Arroyo has started to find his space in the team, which is not receiving balls at chest and head height, but actually coming back and getting them on his feet and being able to turn, because he's actually demonstrated that last game that he can pick a pass, which is probably something that we didn't see earlier in the preseason. We saw that he's got a bit of speed. We saw he's definitely strong on the ball. And we saw a couple of weeks ago that he can, you know, he's got that close control at, you know, to bring it down with his head or chest and then get a shot on target. So he impressed me. But I gave it to Lachlan Jackson just purely because he got thrown in for his first start of the season last minute. He's replacing the captain. He's going into a defense that shipped 4 goals last time around. And to be fair, I thought he was probably the best out of our back four. So, yeah, good on you, Lockie.
Is he up for renewal this year? Is that his contract runs out this year, or did he re-sign? I can't remember.
Oh, I couldn't tell you, to be honest. I'm well off all the current signings and contract lengths of players.
He definitely re-signed last year. He re-signed last year.
Yeah,
but I couldn't tell you if it was for 1 or 2.
I'm sure Dave, or I'm sure someone will be able to confirm that with us. But if he re-signed last year, I would hope that he had a 2-year contract. I think if he had probably been offered 1, I don't know whether he would have taken it or looked elsewhere for a more stable opportunity, given he's starting to get into the mid-20s and everything.
For someone just coming in the starting line to replace the captain and to do such a good job, I think it sort of it at least gives Merrick some sort of selection headaches moving into next week, where it is an international round. We do have the international games on, and there's going to be some players that are going to be unavailable. It's good for him to actually have a bit of competition for places and not just be putting out a team because they're the only ones that we've got that can fill the positions.
Yeah, see, I just don't see. I've sort of moved away from Nigel Bougard being. Like, yes, he's our captain, but I feel like between him and Nikolai, there's sort of got that leadership team vibe going where if they're both in, then Nigel sort of gets it because he's had it for however many years now. But when he's not there, I feel like we're not in that position where we only have the one captain that is the captain of our team. It's kind of a leadership group, and I guess that could even extend to some other people, maybe like a Stevie or whatever as well. So it seems to be the way that things are going, and I think with the discussions for Lachie Jackson's contract, obviously I would hope that that future planning was sort of discussed, because I really don't think we'll see Bugard around beyond this season, unfortunately.
You've only got to look at his presence during the preseason, which was non-existent, where I think he played one game for the whole preseason, and it doesn't bode well. You know, last year, Topper Stanley played every game. He's already been out for a couple of games with injury. Bogard is not getting any younger. And whether it's a season where him and Jackson share the one spot, or whatever the case may be, I think that this is the year that Jackson's really got to sort of stand up to be counted and try and break into that first team.
I completely agree. If it's not now, I dare say we'll probably see him move on and look for opportunities elsewhere where he's going to get more game time, which, you know, is a shame, because I think he's done fairly well for us the last few years since he's been at the club. Obviously, the grand final season where we had Bugard and Topper Stanley playing well all season, it's hard to break into that. But as you said, neither of them are getting any younger. And at some point, we're going to end up with both of them not at the club. And when you look at the alternatives, you got Lachie Jackson, who's played a fair few games. He's he's been around for a bit. But your alternatives there currently are Pat Langma, who, you know, he's up and coming, but you've got to, you know, if there's something wrong with him, then you get down to the academy players. So, it's definitely some thought to what will be happening in the next couple of seasons. I'm sure Ernie has, has been in discussions with both current players and, coaching staff and everything to determine what they're going to be doing looking forward. For me, for my players of the match, I think I pretty much agree with what everyone else has said. I think I went with CVG for player of the match. That ball he put through for Hoffman for the goal was incredible. And there was a number of challenges and tackles where I'm pretty sure he'd lose the ball and then chase them down and win the ball back. It was very good performance for him. And hopefully that's... You know, he's had his sort of blip for the season and he's able to go on and perform well for the rest of the year. So the one all draw leaves the Jets 10th on the table, 2 points from a possible, 12. We're 1 point above Wellington Phoenix, who got their first point in a one all draw against Melbourne Victory on the weekend. And we're equal on points with Brisbane Roar. They just have a superior goal difference on us at the moment. And that takes us into our round 6 game, which will be against Western United down in Geelong on Saturday with 7:30 p.m. kickoff. Matt, there's been a bit of talk about potential outs for this game through international duty. Rydenton's one, I believe, who will be away on international duty with New Zealand. I've also seen some talk about Arroyo potentially and Burns being away on international duty as well. Is this something that we're going to be seeing how good/bad our depth is this week?
I think it's a definite that Arroyo will be away. I think it's a possible that Burns will be, but I may be wrong there. And I think it's really good timing for Ben Canterossi to be, coming back to fitness, because he is the one that will, slip into the starting team ahead of Matt Rydenton, which is great news for all Jets supporters far and wide, in my opinion. The other two, well, Burns isn't starting at the moment, so he won't have any effect on our starting team. And Arroyo is just going to be another case, I think, of trying to get square pegs to fit in round holes. So whether that means that Hoffman plays at the point of the attack and we start with Thurgate, or there's some other, permutation, we're definitely going to be short in the point up at the pointy end. but I don't think that we are necessarily, you know, losing anything in the midfield, especially if we can have that combination of UG and Canna being reunited.
Absolutely. It will absolutely show how lack of depth. I think there might also be a question about Bugard, whether he is able to come back into the squad or whether he will still be missing out on injury. I dare say if he is out, we'll 100% see Lockie Jackson retain his starting spot.
Does he deserve to come straight back in after, you know, the Sydney performance and then the performance of Jackson last week? I know he's, like I said, he's club captain, but Jackson certainly didn't do anything wrong.
No, he didn't. I think it'd be very harsh to drop Jackson. But, you know, whether there is another rotation at the back where we might see Bugard come in and Lockie potentially go to the left and Katrumbas move up the field to cover our lack of numbers up front, that might be something that Ernie does. Andy, how do you think it'll pan out?
Yeah, I was going to say I wouldn't be surprised if, fitness-wise, I don't know if Canna is up to the full 90 yet. So I don't know if maybe you'll see him start and come off and they might bring someone on to play, maybe start Lockie Jackson at centre-back and then push him to the left and bring Bugard on for a bit of a cameo to get a bit of minutes up or whatnot and push Johnny further into that sort of midfield area. But yeah, on the international call-ups, there's a fair bit when Rydenton gets picked for New Zealand for not passing the ball forwards and Bobby Burns gets into the team without even, you know, playing a minute. So clearly those countries don't have too much depth to them. But I think it's the opportunity that'll come for some people. And Ernie was saying on NBN last night, I think it was, that Jack Simmons will probably get into the squad and a few other sort of fringe players might get their chance. So it could be interesting to see how they actually go with it.
To be fair, I think Burns is only getting called up to the under-19 squad, so it's not like a full international. And I think if there's one other thing that we all know about Ernie is that he's pretty set in stone with his team choices, even when he says there's going to be wholesale changes. Wholesale, I think, is one or two. So I can see him doing the minimum amount possible. It's not, you know, necessarily what I'd like to see, but I think that there will be the minimum possible, which will probably be starting Kantorowski instead of Rydenton and starting Thurgate, you know, with Hoffman moving into the middle. And then you'll probably see Langlois or Mackie Petrados sort of come in sort of later in the game. I don't disagree, Andy, that that Katrumbas has probably shown that he's become decent enough ball player to warrant a bit of a start in the middle of the field, you know, maybe sort of anchoring and playing the sort of deeper role than Stevie UG, but I just don't see Ernie being that adventurous. I mean, if you really wanted to be adventurous, you know, with Bugard potentially being fit, you could even go and look at playing like a three at the back and using Miller and Hoffman or Miller and Katrumbas as wing backs, but I don't think that we'll ever see that again anyway.
Yeah, I think the thing that I get worried about with Katrumbas in a defensive position and I guess also in sort of that deeper midfield as well is his ability to track back. There's a few times where you see him lose the ball further upfield and it's not as if, you know, Matt Miller, you see him with just the engine to get back as quickly as he can, and Hoff does that when he plays in that position as well. But Johnny Kaye, it's sort of every second time that he gets back to that sort of position. So, yeah, definitely interesting to see how it's going to pan out.
Absolutely. There's going to be, I think we'll definitely see a much different starting lineup this week to what we've seen last week and through most of this season so far. We come up against the Western United side for the first time. They're currently second in the league. They're coming off a 2-1 win over Western Sydney Wanderers. And I think this is probably their 10th home game in a row or something like that. It seems like every week they're playing down at Geelong. Kickoff is 7:30, as I said.
There are like 16 Melbourne derbies this season, Luke.
Yeah, that's true. We've got the primetime kickoff. I won't go into that because I think that's been changed from what I saw, but we've got the primetime game for this week. Which is always good, especially when we don't host them. How do we think we'll go? Score and prediction.
I'm confident because we have that one good game that we played at Geelong against Victory where we cleaned up. But I'm at the same time, I did not expect much from Western United, but it seems to be that they are smashing all sort of, you know, KPIs for this year so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if we go down, and I am expecting that we will have a 3-1 defeat, and that is Melbourne 3, us 1. So, yeah, not a good outlook for this game, unfortunately.
100% agree. That was actually going to be my pick as well. I just think that they've unfortunately got a bit too much quality for us at the moment, and we're lacking in a few key positions. You know, if we can bring back, if we had Arroyo, if we had Houlihan, if we had Shepherd, if we had this, if we had that, you know, we might have a chance. But I just don't see it at the moment. I think, I know that they're an older team, and, you know, come the summer of football, they might start to struggle, but they just seem to be playing really, really well at the moment. And Rodan has sort of shown that, like, he's certainly a coach that can bring a group of players together and get them all sort of playing to the same tune. So, yeah, I wish
that. It reminds me of Western Sydney when they started their first season, where it was like it was a team of mature age players or younger players that have, like, everyone in that team has something to prove because they've either been written off as not good enough or too old or whatever, so they're just out there to prove everyone wrong. And I think because of that, they're going to have that first season bounce that the Wanderers did.
Wanderers took 6 games to score a goal, from memory. I think they might have even scored their first goal against us in about round 7, or at least had a nil or draw or something. That might have been the first time they got points. But, you know, like, I mean, you've got some quality players playing for that Western United team. And, you know, like, they don't get rattled when they go behind. And, yeah, I just don't like our chances.
No, I completely agree. I'm going with the same score difference. I'm going to say we will lose this one 2-0. I think with the outs, I think we just don't have the attacking power to get through their defence for this game. This weekend also sees the start of the W League season. The Jets are at home in round 1 against Melbourne City. They play Sunday, November 17th at 6 p.m. at Number 2 Sports Ground. Just quickly, guys, obviously there's been a lot of media about how we are going with local players this season. We aren't going with the international players. Do we expect anything from this season, or is this just going to be a slow go through the motions?
I think it's just good to see that they're spending the same amount of money on the W League squad as what they are on the A-League squad. So, you know, good to see that, they've drawn comparisons with the Matildas.
Hmm.
Consistency is key across all leagues, I guess. But, no, I think we'll end up being pleasantly surprised with the W-League team. I think we'll comfortably make the finals, as in we will comfortably get the last spot in the finals. But yeah, I think this first game will definitely go down, considering as that we're pretty much lining up against the current Matildas squad in all the Matildas players that Melbourne City have signed. So not too confident for this game, but I think with the players we've recruited, there's a lot that do have that point to prove that they can step up from, you know, WNPL and all that sort of stuff to the W League setup.
So what I'll do, just because we're running out of time, score prediction. Andy, what is your score for this game?
A 2-1 victory to Melbourne City.
Matt? Oh, don't make me say it. I think they're going to smash us, to be fair. I think it's going to be 4-0.
Yeah, I tend to think it's going to be a bit of a one-sided affair. I'm going to say they will get us 3-0.
But if you'd like, they've
just got too much.
I'm happy to take any wager, Andy. Like, I'll even give you odds.
Ah, dear. So so definitely get to Number 2 Sports Ground on Sunday night and get around the girls in their first game of the season. I don't know what happened there. I think I just muted myself a couple of times. That pretty much wraps up this pod. If people want to find the Jetstream, we invite all listeners to send us any questions, comments, feedbacks, topics you might have. We're accessible on most social medias. We've got Facebook, facebook.com/JetstreamNewey. Twitter and Instagram at JetstreamNewey, and you can also email us at podcast@newcastlefootball.net. You can also join in the forums at newcastlefootball.net and go to the Jetstream sub-forum. Andy, thanks for coming on board.
No worries at all, Luke. Great to be here as always.
And thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having me. And you forgot to mention that you can also add videos to YouTube at We Love the Jetstream channel. I don't know if it exists.
Don't forget that.
Exists yet, but you could start it.
I'm sure someone will start that now. I guess that all that leaves us to do now is Vamos el Jerkos.
Go the Jets.
Go the Jets. Come on, boys. Go the Jets. And girls. Go the Jets.
Am I going to get in trouble for speaking Spanish now? Or
Dos cerveza, por favor?
Hopefully not.
Sí. Sí, señor. Oh, I'm down. Thank you, man.